The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
Have you ever wanted to hear about the real politics in Colombia? What's going on in the political sphere here in this conflictive country? What are the reasons behind the nationwide strikes? What's going on in Bogota? Here on Columbia Calling, in this episode, episode 15, we welcome back Kevin Howlett of Columbia Politics, a British Colombian politics expert, and he'll talk all about what's going on with President Santos, why Colombia is in the state it is. And, well, I think it will be a no-holds-barred interview this afternoon because he's promised to, you know, unravel his tongue and talk all about what's going on in Colombia. Don't miss it, because if you're thinking of coming to Colombia, if you're thinking of visiting this country, you know, what better to do than to get under the skin of the reality of the country. So don't miss Columbia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall, 2 p.m. Colombia time, 3 p.m. Eastern time.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, your online radio resource about life abroad.
The U.S. government has spoken. It wants higher tax rates, capital controls to keep your money under their control, surveillance to spy on your every email. In short, the government wants to control every aspect of your life and make you their slave. As an internationally minded person, you know keeping everything you own in one country could be disastrous. But how do you get started? Announcing Passport to Freedom. In just 3 days, you'll learn how to escape high taxes and reduce or eliminate your tax burden. How to form an offshore corporation or trust. The best places to get a second passport. The best places to expatriate, and more. This 3-day event will reveal everything you need to know about keeping yourself and your assets safe. Tickets to this event in fabulous Las Vegas are extremely limited, so go to PassportOverseas.com. That's PassportOverseas.com. Seats are extremely limited, so register today and take advantage of a special 50% discount for overseas radio listeners. Don't miss this chance to see offshore and expat experts like Joel Nagel, Bobby Casey, Jake DeSillis, Pete Sisko, Andrew Henderson, and more. Go to OverseasPassport.com now and reserve your ticket before the government shuts this opportunity down.
From China's Great Wall to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, this is the Overseas Radio Network.
It's Monday, 16th of September. You're listening to Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall. We're here talking about all things Colombian, and in particular, this week, we'll be dealing with political nuances taking place at the moment in Colombia. Later on, in the second segment, and then further segments, we'll be talking to Kevin Howlett, who was our first interviewee on this show 15 weeks ago. Yes, that's right. We're 15 weeks in. Anyway, Kevin's welcomed back, and he'll be talking all about what's going on in Colombia. And we have to thank him for his time, because this is a very sought-after man who's continually on television here in debates and foreign affairs shows, talking all about the situation in Colombia, and was, you know, arguing in Spanish on debates, national debates here, about what's going on, and giving a more international view on the situation in Colombia. Because one of the big deals, one of the big reasons that there are so many problems here, and that when you talk to any Colombian, is that the problem in their country is, of course, the most complex problem. That's how they see it. There's a whole issue of navel gazing. We can't deal with the FARC guerrillas. We can't deal with the ELN guerrillas. No, that there's the problem of narcotráfico. It's also complicated here. But in reality, you know, the conflict in Colombia began over land and economy. It's not like the Philippines. We're not mixing religion in there, and we're not mixing other various other colonial aspects. But Anyway, so Kevin will be back and he'll be talking about it. He's given me firm assurance that he's prepared to more or less talk about anything, and I expect that we're going to be, lambasting the Colombian president, Juan Manuel Santos, because of his relative inactivity. I say relative, it's complete inactivity, and regarding the farmer strikes that to basically paralyze the country for 2 weeks. Supposedly they're over. I mean, if you looked at the mainstream press here in Colombia, you would think that there were no more strikes. But I do believe that the teachers are about to go on strike again, and possibly health workers. And a good friend of mine who's a truck driver who needs to ship things up to my hotel in Mompox, which is a 14-hour drive from the capital. So I stock up on essential goods and necessary items here, and I send them up because it's cheaper that way. And he says that in Aguachica, which is a major crossroads on the Pan-American Highway, he can't get through because the campesinos, which is the literal translation is peasant, but we can just say farmers, smallholders, farmers are blocking the road still there. But if you were to read the mainstream press here in Colombia, nothing's going on. Everything's back to normal, and we seem to be sort of sidelined again. You know, whatever's happening is of lesser importance. I don't know. As Kevin will explore these issues with Kevin. You know, what's going on with the national press. Of course, one of the big problems is that some of the huge national outlets are in fact owned by the president's own family. So I mean, I don't like to make comparisons, but you should sort of have almost a Berlusconi effect. It's like the president can do no wrong, and while we're all criticizing him, and his, I mean, approval ratings is down into the 20s, 29% or something like that. Kevin will clearly correct me on that, but his approval rating is so low, and yet there's no editorials out there, and there's no real reporting in the mainstream press. But of course, you know, if you want to find the news, and you want to find the news that you're looking for, on the internet, obviously, you can find anything. So, of course, it's all tailored to the market. To the readership. So anyway, so what else is going on here in Colombia? Well, we're still going on. I mean, 15 weeks ago when we started Colombia Calling, Kevin and I were talking about the peace dialogues, which were just starting off, and they were, you know, just getting into the five-point agenda there in Cuba between the FARC and the government. They were just establishing what was going to be the five-point agenda. And we're 15 weeks later, and they've just supposedly finished the first point of agenda. Now, peace processes and dialogues take time. They should not be rushed. But President Santos doesn't have time on his side. We don't know if he's going to run again next year in November for the presidential elections. And of course, he held his card so close to his chest 3 years ago. We didn't know he was going to run for presidency, even though to those of us who are observers of the situation, it seemed obvious, but he didn't make any announcement until it was particularly kind of definite that he'd win. And so you get this situation where we've got the FARC peace dialogues going on in Cuba. We don't really know what's going on there. We hope something comes out of it. We're a positive. I was able to interview the mayor of Bogota, who was an ex-guerrilla, the M19 guerrillas, and he still remains positive. So that's good news. Kevin and I are positive. We are observers of the situation. What else is going on? Well, the Nicaragua debate, the issue over these huge swathes of ocean territory have been ceded to Nicaragua around San Andres and Providencia. And of course, this goes on, and Colombia is saying they're not going to recognize what the International Court in The Hague has declared. And so I don't know what this was. Will this make Colombia an international pariah? I don't know. Hopefully we get to talk about that a bit more. And then what else do we have? Well, it's that, really. That's really what's occupying the headlines. And that's what should be occupying the headlines. But I think we're still in this period of discontent for President Santos. I don't think he's going to get better. I don't think his ratings are going to climb. I think he could be, possibly, a president who manages to sign some sort of peace agreement with the FARC, which is almost, a few years ago, it was unthinkable, and yet lose the following presidency. So we're watching who is mobilizing on the sidelines to run for president. And that's, an interesting situation, because you've got the sort of the Green Party, which is not an environmental party. Let's get that straight, right from the start. And that's been misconstrued in the international press on occasion. The Green Party is just Green Party because they like the color green. rather than their environmental policy, which may be somewhat better than other environmental policies in other parties. But anyways, you've got the Greens and the Progressistas, the Progressives, who are probably going to unite. So that's Fajardo, an ex-mayor and governor of Antioquia, ex-mayor of Medellin, the M19, Navarro Wolf, and Peñalosa, a mayor of Bogotá. Now, this, you know, it seems interesting, this coalition. So politics is never a dull moment here. And coming right up, we'll be discussing all of this with Kevin Howlett of Columbia Politics. That's columbia-politics.com, probably the English speaker who knows most about politics in the country. And so don't go away. This is Columbia Calling. We're here on the Overseas Radio Network. I am your host, Richard McCall, and we'll be right back.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
It is said that liberty is the only thing you cannot have unless you are willing to give it to others. Do you believe in and want to spread the message of liberty to a younger generation around the world? The Language of Liberty Institute does just that, with camps in developing countries such as Albania, Nigeria, Armenia, and Mozambique. If you want to learn more about this powerful and growing initiative to sponsor, attend, or even become one of the teachers, visit our website at languageofliberty.org to learn more. You can subscribe to email updates or like our Facebook page to follow our activities.
Are you looking to invest, live, or retire overseas? Before you pack your bags, you need to log on to NagelLaw.com. It's the only stop you need to make for global business, asset protection, estate planning, overseas residency, and citizenship needs. Our experts have experience working in 41 countries around the world. Starting a business abroad can be overwhelming without expert help. We assist clients with foreign trust, foundations, corporations, LLCs, IBCs, and property acquisition. Need help with IRA assets abroad, capital formation, foreign securities issues, banking, brokerage, or finance needs? NagelLaw.com. We ensure compliance with U.S. tax and regulatory laws. We engineer global structures to help our clients achieve their personal business objectives. Get started today. To find out about our introductory personal asset protection plan, visit us online, NagelLaw.com. We represent capital overseas.
This tree was never chopped down because this crutch never needed to be carved. Because these legs never grew weak. Because this child never got polio. Over the past 20 years, Rotary Club members have helped immunize over 2 billion children against polio. Now we are on the brink of eradicating this crippling disease once and for all. But we need your help. Thanks to an historic matching grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, every dollar Rotary raises will work twice as hard to make sure vaccines reach the people who need it, to protect the children of the world against polio forever. This is an opportunity to end polio now. Visit rotary.org/endpolio. Rotary, humanity in motion.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
Welcome back to Columbia Calling. This is your host, Richard McCall. And as I said earlier, we're here with Kevin Howlett. This is episode 15. Kevin was here with us in the first ever episode. And we're here to talk about the political circumstances taking place here in Colombia right now, as it has been tumultuous. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi, thanks, Richard.
You're very welcome, Kevin. Listen, you wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago on Columbia Reports, a very good news outlet. We've had the editor here on the show as well, Adrian and Alselma. You wrote a piece saying that, let's say, the week that Santos lost Colombia?
That was the title, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, it was a provocative title, of course. But President Santos, he seems... he's got... Well, he may well be running for election next year, in 2014. And he's got to decide in November whether he's going to go ahead or not. And he just seems to be losing both control of the country in some ways and control of his image or the way that the Colombians see him. He's on something like 21% favourability in the polls, which is pretty disastrous. I mean, if you think of American elections, they always talk about the 50% being the key moment. If you drop below 50%, you stand it's very difficult then to get re-elected. Santos, this week that I referred to was the week when there was nationwide strikes, rural strikes, protests from farmers that felt as though, well, basically they weren't earning any money. Farmers in this country have been hit from a whole host of reasons. And protests emerged. The government had been warned about these protests for a long time. And Santos did a very illogical and not at all in any way sensible from a political point of view thing. He came on air and said, no, these protests are nothing to worry about. You know, move along, nothing to see here. And then that was on the first day of the strikes. The second day, they flared up, they carried on. And Santos came on TV and continued to manage the crisis in a way that was pretty amateur, really. Surprisingly so. He just seemed to forget all the rules that you would apply to any crisis management. He started to effectively lie, you know, saying that the country was under control, his government knew what it was doing, the protests were nothing. The protesters, they didn't really have any fair demands either. And people saw through it, frankly. People saw through it. And by the end of the week, people were just about fed up of the government and said, well, you know, how on earth can we let this guy? He doesn't know what on earth's going on in the country. He doesn't know what's going on outside of Bogota, and that's the criticism that faces him. So he lost it in a sense that lost the country in terms of a major uprising, if you like, for about 2 weeks in the end, major uprising throughout the nation, and also politically, particularly from his point of view of his image. I'm not sure whether he can recover, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a bit later, but it's looking pretty precarious for the president at the moment.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I was talking to the mayor of Bogota. I had an interview with him not so long ago, and he said...
The wonderful
mayor of Bogota. Love him or hate him, he's there. You know, it's...
Yes.
Love him or hate him, he's there, and he's trying to do what he's trying to do, and, well, not so effectively, but I think, you know, what he said is that, and I asked him about the strikes, because obviously they were, you know, manifested massively here in Bogota, in the capital, and he goes, well, you look at everyone's grandparents in Colombia, they were all farmers. So it was, you know, most people felt something, you
well,
know.
60% of Colombians are reliant on or involved in agriculture or what happens in El Campo. What happens in rural Colombia. So it's, well, it's obviously more than half the country that are directly today related to it. And so Petro's point that, you know, if you look back in time, that figure would probably be closer to 80, 90%. As, you know, it's a rural country.
It's a rural country.
And if you forget about the rural side, if Santos continues to govern only for Bogota and only for the capital city and only for the urban population, he doesn't stand a chance, does he?
Well, what we're seeing manifested is obviously just an absolute sort of propagation of the elitism in Colombia.
This is it. I mean, and Santos comes from... The criticism of Santos, yeah, I think is a fair one, is that he's sort of an oligarch. He comes from a family that not only owns the largest news outlet, El Tiempo, but also a family that's been here governing the country for years. And he has this sense of this entitlement. And we know this from England. They talk of the kind of the Eton lot, that feel an entitlement to govern and run the country. And you see that with Santos. He comes from one of these rich families. He's never really had to do anything to get this job. It was the first, I've said this I think the last time, the first election, you can imagine this, the first popular election that Santos faced was the one to become president. I think that really does tell you a lot you need to know about Colombian politics. He is an elitist. He doesn't always necessarily just govern from the elite, but he does sound like a cocktail president that's totally detached from the rest of the nation. And that, in an election year, is disastrous.
Shall we lighten this up for fear that we're going to be taken off the air by censors? No, I think we've got to be careful. In Santos, you know, he stands up there and he gets onto TV and he tries to present himself as a sort of third way. He's very much Blairite in that. He's co-written a book. But his third way has been remarkably ineffective in that Blair was managed, you know, mediatically at very least, was incredibly slick. And for Santos to get up there and say, no, this strike doesn't exist. It's not happening. I mean, who was behind this debriefing of the president?
Well, the problem is the people who advise him are the same lot. You know, they're all from the same sorts of families. I mean, I'm oversimplifying, but not too much. The third way is interesting because, of course, you've got Blair and Clinton, two absolute master communicators, perfect with the press, perfect with... For Blair, obviously, he went off the boil, but certainly had, for a period of time, a significant level of popularity. Whereas Santos, he may well have some of the third-way politics, and I think probably one-to-one, he's probably quite a nice guy. He comes across decently in interviews where it's just one-on-one, but in terms of the big set-piece... moments when you want the president to come out and speak with force and drum up the troops and be charismatic, he doesn't have that. And it's partly his advisors and it's partly him. And I think this goes back to the point of, well, if he didn't have to ever run for election, if he was never trained in that way, never had to win any votes really, it's not surprising. He just hasn't developed the same political skills that in more professional political environments you see with Clinton, with Blair, with Obama, with anyone really. We don't just have to highlight those cases, but even you know, Hollande in France has a certain charisma. I don't particularly like it, but he's good on the airwaves, as with Sarkozy. And Santos doesn't get that, or at least is not able to do it for whatever reason.
But he also looks like he also presents this front that it always seems as if he's very careful. He might not be well briefed, but he also seems so careful. He seems like he's waiting. You know, he never wants to jump in and make a decision. He's like, oh, what would my advisors say? I mean, I always get that impression from him. He's like, well, I must defer to someone else.
He does have you do well. That's often the criticism of him, that he lacks that character, as they call it here, the force or the decision making. And if you compare it, what's interesting, if you compare it to the past president, which was Uribe, who we've talked about before, and he is a guy that, again, like him or loathe him, a guy that's incredibly charismatic, a powerful voice, a great communicator. He was perhaps Colombia's best political communicator. He was always known for taking decisions and, frankly, couldn't give a stuff what anyone else thought. You know, if he was attacking Venezuela, he would launch into long tirades against Chavez, something that, in the language, in the very diplomatic language, a very sort of elitist language of Santos, you don't hear ever. Now, is that a bad thing or a good thing? I'm not sure that it really matters. What really matters is the fact that the Colombian population seem to want a bit of that sort of caudillo, Uribe leadership, expressing leadership and taking decisions. And I think that's part of the problem with Santos. He came in, he was obviously chosen as Uribe's successor, but he came in and then supposedly the Uribistas say that it's a form of treachery is the word in English. I was struggling to remember what it was in
Betrayal.
English. Betrayal. Why does that happen? Sometimes you totally forget the word in English. Anyway, so he came in and sort of promoted policies that were at odds with some of the elements of Uribismo. And he seems to have run the country in that way, that it's kind of one thing one day and another thing another day, which is, I suppose, a similarity to Blair. He likes to be liked by everyone, but the problem is he's running up against the possibility of being liked by absolutely no one, which is, as I said, 21%. 21% of Colombians view him favourably, and over 80%, 78 or 79%, depends on which poll you look at, is against the idea of him running for re-election. Doesn't mean he won't win, because Colombia is a funny old place like that, but it means that he certainly is, at the moment, an incredibly unpopular person, probably because of that lack of leadership that you mentioned.
Well, it's because we've stepped in from, you know, again, like you said, Uribe, incredibly strong, took no prisoners, I mean, quite literally, took no prisoners, and we stepped into Santos, and I welcomed Santos in. You know, when he first came in, I thought, wow, this is a statesman, here's a diplomat. You know, here's someone, and that's what he is. He's a diplomat. He's nothing else. He's not been governing Colombia. He's been governing Colombia from abroad, from an image point of view. Now, listen, we're delving into very deep Colombian politics here. Don't go away, because we're going to get even further into them, because there's much more to talk about. So we'll be back in just a few short minutes. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and I'm here with Kevin Howlett of ColombiaPolitics.com.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Jason Hartman, and I want to welcome you to the Jet Setter Show blogcast, an audio version of our written blog at jetsettershow.com. You can find the full-length podcast at jetsettershow.com or on iTunes, where we interview thought leaders and experts on exploring lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Here is today's blogcast.
Thank you, Jason. Expats are discovering that travel to Tulum, Mexico is like finding your inner hippie. Maybe you never were a hippie but kind of wanted to be. Maybe not. Maybe you're just into nature, community, and a big helping of relaxation. Tulum is a small town on the Caribbean coast of the Yucatan Peninsula that, despite an explosion of growth, actually has a plan in place to manage the increased demands in harmony with the environment. In a word, the city has prepared to grow in a way that doesn't ruin the very thing that brought people there in the first place. For expats interested in travel to Tulum, expect to find subtropical forests, long, wide beaches, and the mystical influence of a Mayan past hanging over everything. While some of Tulum's beaches have become known around the world, it's easy to find long stretches of sand with hardly another human nearby, perfect for downshifting from the rest of the world. The turquoise Caribbean on one side and jungle on the other has caused many a visitor to lapse into a hypnotic dream state they swear never to leave. From biosphere preserves rich with incredible diversity of animals and plants, to the eco-themed parks designed to put you in touch with the area's history, nature, and culture, you'll never lack for activities to activate your get-outside bone. But is it for you? Maybe a week or month-long trip would be in order. As with any new area, it takes a while to settle in and discern the true vibe of the place. Maybe you'll like it so much that you'll break out the beads, tie-dye shirts, and start channeling Jerry Garcia. Then again, you might say, to hell with this. But for jet-setting aging hippies, travel to Tulum could be just what you've been looking for. For more, visit jetsettershow.com. For the Jet Setter Blogcast, I'm Will Weeks.
Thanks for listening to this audio blog, and please see disclaimers and important information at the website.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall, here with Kevin Howlett, an expert, a British expert in Colombian politics, TV pundit, radio expert, because he's been on our show twice. Kevin, you talk all about Colombia politics and Colombian politics. Obviously, your page is columbia-politics.com. We've been talking about President Santos. We pretty much laid into President Santos in the last 10 minutes. But I want to say, you get on television quite a lot. I mean, I saw you the other night. You were on something called 360 Degrees on a national channel. And I just find that it's so hard to actually get any message across, because you're pitched against so many opposing, let's say, opinion makers, and they all shout at one another. Isn't that just politics in Colombia?
I think it's Colombia, right? I mean, it's a funny... there's a lot of... They're worried about what they call the polarisation of the politics here. But it's often polarised, but not really on the politics themselves. It's just personalities. So there's a lot of rancour and sometimes hatred of others. And in England and in the United States, to a certain extent, there's a kind of diplomatic decency, which means that you don't attack people on a personal level. You don't really see that here in Colombia. So people are very willing to, as I said, they were calling Santos treacherous or betrayal, mm-hmm. betraying Uribe. And it's always referred to in sort of cliches of war or cliches of treason and things like that, rather than actually looking at the detail of the politics. And the programme you mentioned, I mean, I'm a great fan of it, it's fun, but it's very, very cutthroat, in the sense that you have about 5 seconds to express your view, and the chances are someone will shout you down, because they won't necessarily be against what you say, but they just have to say it with that sort of power. It's the kind of Colombia is passion slogan that they used a few years ago to promote the country. People are like that. People are very fiery and very vibrant, and that translates into politics. Unfortunately, it doesn't really help debate.
Now, we've got to go back a little bit. We were talking about these strikes, the nationwide strikes that have been taking place, and they're not over. I mean, I know for a fact, I've got the hotel out on the coast in Monforce, this isolated town. So we send our equipment and furniture that we don't get made out there. We send it in from Bogota, and we've got this truck that takes us out. And this week he's had to go all the way around from Bogota via Medellin to go up to a different route to come down to Mompox, because in Aguachica, which is a major crossroads, you know, major truck stop, let's say, on the Pan American Highway, on this highway that leads from Bogota to the coast, they're still demonstrating, but of course, there's nothing in the press. There's nothing telling us. And of course, during this whole agricultural strike, but what did they focus on? The rioting that took place in downtown Bogota, where the graffiti, you know, where the encapuchados, there's the people with masks on, you know, but look a bit like cowboys from old movies, but without the cowboy hats. They're just with the scarf around their mouths, spray painting everything, you know, down with Santos, out with, you know, multinational firms, and basically this renter mob that do turn up and make and do riot. So, but, I mean, why isn't the press covering what's going on in the country?
Why isn't the press covering what's going on in the country? The press doesn't ever go out into the country. The press is so focused on Bogota, it's bizarre. I was actually in the riots down in, I obviously wasn't throwing sticks and stones, I was there to report on it, in Bogota in the centre, and it was, as you say, a renter mob, really. There was nothing to do with the protests. The problem about the Colombian press is it not only has a very short memory, but it's just not that interested in what goes on outside of Bogota, perhaps because the people who buy the newspapers themselves are probably all based here in Bogota, or a huge percentage of them are, unfortunately. So I think it's always been that way, that there's two countries, you know, there's the urban Colombia and the rural Colombia, and rural Colombia is overlooked. And this is part of the reason for these protests. The vice president said that these protests haven't lasted 12 years, but actually 50 years. There's a sort of sense of abandonment, and the press that doesn't do their job properly is totally uninterested in what actually happens in much of Colombia, and it makes for a debate that's so centralised on Bogota, which, a great city as it is, it doesn't represent all of Colombia. Just one thing as well on the press, what was interesting, and I wrote an article on this, was that when the protests started, they were very silent on the protests in general. They were sort of almost avoiding them and pretending they weren't happening. And some people were suggesting, well, there's a bit of a sort of cosy relationship between some of the press and the government. I don't want to say any more than that, but if you see what I mean, there's a sort of willingness to report the government lie for whatever reason, through not having the time to devote to the journalism themselves, or for whatever reason you might expect. But the press doesn't do their job well enough, I think, here. It falls to people like Columbia Reports, and in some way my page, Columbia Politics, and of course your articles. Doesn't just fall to us, but it's useful to get other points of view, because the mass media here is unfortunately far too centralised and far too uninterested about what really happens in Colombia.
I think it's very interesting what you mentioned on there, the vice president, when he said this is an issue that's been going on for 50 years. I mean, the whole issue of land in Colombia has been the central point, or was the central point, right from the very beginning of, let's say, the armed uprising, the conflict, the emergence of the guerrillas. And as someone said, and I don't recall who, so, you know, quoting out of context, but someone said, you know, the M19, that's the M19, formed on fewer pretenses than what happened recently. I mean, they formed, you know, just out of some injustices. Talk about that, Argelino Garzón, the vice president, you know, really almost against the political tide, but of course he isn't, you know, really that affiliated with the president himself. They come from different angles. And it was a political decision by Santos to put this Caleño unionist.
Convenient.
There was an agreement done here, and because he's reached his zenith, Argelino Garzón almost dying in the process, but to say that has been absolutely, I mean, I found that groundbreaking, and probably he had Santos just furious in the coffers of the Palacio de Nariño. I mean, I can only imagine it. Can you imagine the vice president breaking rank? Can you imagine Joe Biden breaking rank with Obama?
No. And that's part of the curiosity of Colombian politics as well. There's a lot of these coalitions, relationships of convenience. And the Santos-Garzón relationship is a bizarre one. I mean, because Garzón was even talked about as a possible presidential candidate for Uribismo. to stand against, well, in the event that Santos didn't run this time in 2014. But he would be a candidate for Uribismo, which is very much to the right, but he himself is considered to be a man of the left because he comes from this union background. Angelino Garzón is interesting because he's one of the very, very, very few ministers that's not from Bogotá and is not only interested in Bogotá. He went out and spoke to the campesinos in February when I was down reporting on the coffee protests, the first protests, if you like, of this year. He was the one that was sent out to sort it out. He went in and negotiated an end. There's a curious character called Lucho Garzón, who was a mayor of nothing to do with Angelino Garzón in terms of familiar relationships, just a coincidence of the name. He was a mayor, of course, of Bogotá previously, and not a very good one. I seem to... Everyone tells me it's before my time here. Richard's shaking his head.
I was here. I remember.
Yeah. Well, he has got a position, a rather delightful position, called Minister of Social Dialogue. But he never goes out of Bogotá. Well, I mean, I'm doing him a disservice. People criticise him for not going out of Bogotá enough, and he was unable to come to any agreement with the farmers, any agreement with the coffee farmers, and it was up to Angelino Garzón to go in. Now, why is that? Because Angelino Garzón speaks like a regional Colombian. He doesn't speak like a Bogotá Strato 500. Strato is the way they classify the society here. So if you say someone's Strato 6, it means they're posh, effectively. Strato 500 is people who are really, really posh. And that's how you describe people like Santos. So Angelino Garzón is a very interesting character. You're right. Things like the M19 and, of course, the FARC as well, how they came about was it's all to do with land distribution. Actually, a very interesting point I want to make, actually, is that the peace process, which we might touch on, the peace process, we've agreed one point on the five-point agenda, which is rural reform, or agrarian reform, as they call it. Now, Santos has come out with a new agrarian pact last week. So he, responding to all these the crisis, he gathered together the great and the good, which is basically
his buddies,
his friends,
yeah.
Men in suits. Not there's anything wrong with men in suits. I'm one of them. But none of the peasant farmers. They call them peasant farmers here. It's not a negative or pejorative term. But the farmers themselves weren't invited. Anyway, he had a meeting for about 3 or 4 hours with all these big wigs in the Palacio. In the presidential palace, and came to an agreement to sign a new agricultural pact. Now, I thought we had a new agricultural pact with the FARC, so I really just don't know what on earth's going on. And the problem is, Santos gives the impression that it's all improvisation, that he doesn't know what's going on, and there isn't really a plan for the future, which is... And this is the point about agriculture. There hasn't been and isn't a plan really for sustained growth. The infrastructure is terrible. We know this from our trip down to Montas. And the highway that you talk about, the rather delightful sounding highway that goes from north to south, is a piddly little road. I mean, it would be a sort of B road in England,
yeah.
Which is a very narrow road, and you only have to get one tractor on there and you're stuffed.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's a very sort of, it feels like abandoned place, really.
I don't know. I think you're right, this. I don't think President Santos has a plan. I think in effect, he's just bouncing from one thing to the next, seeing his way through, and he's pegged his whole hopes. And we will in the next segment, we will go on to the peace talks, the peace dialogues with the FARC in Cuba. But I think he's pegged his hopes on nothing more than signing an agreement with them. And my worry is that this will be an agreement like that of Guatemala, where basically they just agree everything. No one is represented. Peace is signed, that's in massive inverted commas, and the country continues in the same vein with, you know, a lack of land redistribution, a lack of infrastructure, but supposedly we're in peace. But anyway, this is something we can come back to, but I see too many correlations and similarities between what happened in Guatemala in 1995-96 and what is going on behind closed doors, and that we cannot know and we don't know what is actually being agreed there in Cuba. So don't go away. We're talking to Kevin Howlett of Columbia-Politics.com. I'm Richard McColl. This is Columbia Calling. We'll be right back.
Con la luna, habla con la luna. blah, blah.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
You've decided that you want to move overseas for that quality of life experience you've always dreamed of. But you don't want to give up the best of back home. We agree. Things like high-speed internet, safe neighborhoods where you can stroll along a shaded sidewalk, a place where you know your neighbors and you have friends close by. These are important. Grand Pacifica Beach and Golf Resort gives you the best comforts of back home paired with the exceptional lifestyle only available south of the border. Imagine strolling along over 3 miles of secluded beach, playing a round of golf along the ocean, surfing a world-class break all to yourself, enjoying a fine meal on your balcony and toasting to another spectacular sunset. All this and more can be yours only an hour from Managua. Complete home and lot packages start under $100,000, and a nice home on the golf course is yours for the mid-twos. Come visit for a weekend and enjoy our oceanside golf course. Ride horseback on the beach, meet your future neighbors, and make some new friends. Grand Pacifica may be a place you'd like to call home. For more information, email Mike at MikesGringoLife.com. That's Mike at MikesGringoLife.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control health care, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable healthcare, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.JustLanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's JustLanded.com.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall. We're here with Kevin Howlett of Columbia-Politics.com, an expert in the field of Colombian politics. And we've been talking about, we've been bashing President Santos unashamedly, but again, he's been taking a bashing from all sides. Everyone's on strike, and we even had a nocturnal strike here go past my window the other week. And we've been talking about that, but we've been touching on the issue of land redistribution and land reform, which of course is one of the key points in the 5-point agenda that the government has with the FARC guerrillas. Now, the FARC, for those of you who are a little bit rusty on it, although we talk about it every week here, the FARC is the Fuerzas Armadas Revolucionarias de Colombia, literally the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, the oldest guerrilla group in the Americas, if not in the world now, because it's been more than 50 years, and they've been in this basically scaled-up conflict, which has now obviously muddied the waters through with drugs trafficking and the trade and illicit products and probably people trafficking and illegal mining and anything else you can manage, they do. But anyway, the government has managed to get them to Cuba, and this we applaud. Kevin might refute this, but this here at Columbia Calling, we have to applaud that there is some dialogue going on between the government after so long, after 8 years of basically waged war with Uribe, and now we have Santos, who we always knew was going to be a diplomat, who we always knew was going to be someone, we knew. I mean, in every circumstance when a kidnapped person, a hostage was released, Santos was in the image before he ran for president. A couple of years before he ran for president, I went, this guy is putting himself out there so that everybody knows who he is. So, we may not have electricity 24 hours a day. We may not have running water, but everyone has TV on at some point in the day. Here's this Colombia. You may not have a roof, but you've got TV. And so therefore they could recognize Santos. As I saw this. Anyway, so they were in this dialogue. There's a 5-point agenda, and supposedly something has been agreed on agricultural agrarian reform. Now, we've had 2 weeks of massive nationwide strikes, largely based around agricultural problems. Not only that, mining, truck drivers, the price of gasoline, health workers, teachers, you name it. I mean, I think out-of-work journalists are probably going to go on strike shortly, like me. But what can we say? What is going on in Cuba?
Well, we don't know. I mean, Cuba is Like you, I do applaud the initiative. I think it's very bold from Santos. And if he does pull it off, well, good on him and fair play to him. I think, you know, it would be an amazing result for Colombia, whatever the peace looks like. Santos is talking about us living now in what he calls the post-conflict, which I think is getting ahead of himself. But Colombia will emerge from the peace process, if they sign it, with a very difficult 10, 15 years. Anyway, the other peace process, you mentioned Guatemala. I think what they tried to use as the perfect peace case, is the case study, is Ireland. And, of course, what you had there was a very serious proposal, a very serious an agreement in the end. Serious, I'm using in the Colombian sense, which means very well-developed. And we just don't get the sense, I think, in Cuba that there's really anything going on that makes much sense. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of improvisation. Again, I mentioned that about Santos earlier on. And there's a sense that although they have this five-point agenda and it's all sort of juiciosamente studied, you know, very judiciously put together, they seem to be inventing new things every week. The government came out and said it needs a referendum for it to go through, which I think is the right thing, in the same way that they did in Ireland. But the FARC have come out and said, oh, actually, we want to call the Congress. They've called the Congress. They've demanded that the Congress go and visit them in Cuba. And, I mean, what an absolute joke that the Senate president is waiting on the phone call of the FARC negotiators to tell him what day they think they want to see them in Cuba. What sort of democracy is it when you have the legislature totally waiting and on the whim of a terrorist organisation? It just doesn't make much sense. What's happening in Cuba? I mean, I remain positive that something is going to emerge from it. I'm pretty sure there is. And a lot of what we've got in the moment is stuff and nonsense. Sound and fury, as Shakespeare might have said. So I'm optimistic. There are these 5 points on the agenda. We've supposedly agreed something on agrarian reform, but we don't know much of the detail. The thing that really is interesting is the political participation, which I mentioned on this programme whenever we had the programme a few months ago now. It would have been 15 weeks ago.
Yes, exactly.
15th, yeah. So there we go. And they were entering to talk about they had just signed, if you remember, the week before, they had signed the agrarian pact. So the first point on the agenda, and now they're still stuck on point two, which is political participation. Now this means, you know, in what capacity could a demobilised FARC join in with the political debate? I mean, there is a consensus, and I think it's right, that there is a space open for them in some political context. But we just don't know what that's going to look like. And then you have other things that are difficult, like victims. The FARC have said there was a bit of a breakthrough a few weeks ago when the FARC did appear to admit some form of involvement in the victimisation, in causing deaths and kidnapping and so on. But there's not enough of it, really. I read out on this programme that you mentioned, the 360 degrees program, I read out a quotation from the IRA when they were negotiating peace in Northern Ireland, and it was very it was full of contrition and full of expressed regret for the pain they'd caused for the victims' families, and there's none of that from the FARC. I mean, even this week they said we don't take hostages. We take what was the phrase they used? We take people retained in battle, some
military
nonsense.
Something or other, military targets or those. But again, you know, these are not a legitimate force, and this lack of contrition. I mean, I remember I grew up in the UK in London, and I remember not being able to go home sometimes because of the bombs put place. There was one bomb in Kensington and those areas and stuff, so we couldn't get home. And
you lived in Kensington?
So I'm one of the strata.
You're revealing your posh upbringing.
Yes, my strato 500, as they said. But no, I couldn't get home, and I remember this sort of stuff. But you know, to measure, you never thought that Martin McGuinness, for example, would be contrite, and yet he managed it. He was someone who was incredibly difficult to imagine, offering out some sort of sympathy to those who had lost their lives or loved ones in the conflict. You don't get this with Ivan Marquez, Jesus Santrich, and all the others, Andres Paris, and all of those others. You don't get the idea that they really care. Yeah, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just being completely subjective in this. And fair enough, I can be completely subjective in this. But at the end, the Colombian people, on no level, every single level of Colombian society has been touched by the violence, are going to need some measure of an apology, of a recognition of what's gone on for 50 years.
Absolutely. I mean, it's quite sickening, actually, the way that the pretentiousness and the arrogance that the people like, particularly, well, I'm not going to name which one, but
carefully,
it is unbelievable, and yeah, like you say, it is a subjective reaction, but I think we're perfectly in our rights to react with anger and hostility to people who just appear to not be interested in any way about the victims they've caused. Now, of course, this may well change, and we hope that they will emerge through gritted teeth to accept a certain role. I mean, they've talked about themselves as being the victims. So it's not the people that were blown up by landmines, the people that were kidnapped, or the people that were killed with shots to the head, the soldiers that have killed, all those guys are victims. But the FARC at the moment doesn't seem to be recognising that. We hope this will change, and I'm sure that they will move themselves, as I say, sluggishly to a position of some acceptance of their role. And at the end of the day, yes, we all need that, and Colombians are beginning to become very disheartened with this process. Support for it is dropping. It's still high-ish. You know, there's around two-thirds of people that support the process. We both support it. We hope it will be successful. And at the end of the day, it will be a case of, well, we'll just have to grin and bear it and take some of the arrogance and the nonsense. But it does really need some form of acceptance and contrition. I just hope it's forthcoming because, as I say, we haven't heard anything from them yet that seems to suggest they're anywhere near to begin to accept their role in this rather pointless conflict that's lasted 50 years. Yeah. I mean, I think it's pointless, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's just absurd. I mean, the FARC, what they talk about is, you know, political involvement and the left is persecuted. Now, the left is persecuted here. The Polo Democratico Party, which is the main sort of institutionalised left-wing party, has complained of the Rastrojos, which is a right-wing backroom or post-paramilitary group, threatening their leaders in all sorts of ways. So yes, the left is persecuted, but yes, there absolutely is a role in Colombian politics for a left that's institutionalised, as we can see by the mayor of Bogotá and as we can see by Polo Democrats. So their reasons for continuing the conflict just don't really make sense. They aren't there.
Well, you know, it's an anachronism today to have this conflict. And of course, the waters, as I did mention, have been muddied by narcotráfico, you know, the drug stealing and whatever. But I mean, you find it so difficult to understand. And I have to say, you know, those guys who are in Cuba, they don't represent the rank and file of the FARC, you know, the poor campesino without access to running water, without access to electricity, without access to health or schooling, you know, who are so easily manipulated through sort of, let's say, a Marxist ideology. It's very easy to manipulate someone with no, you know, recognition of anything else. And of course, these guys out there who are university educated and I've heard have been enjoying smoked salmon in the Norwegian embassy in Cuba, you know, they don't represent the FARC.
They certainly don't. I mean, if you look at the there was a great picture that emerged in Semana, which is one of the main publications here, of a shot of Ivan Marquez, one of the top. Well, he was the chief negotiator before someone else went there and took his place. He's still there, but he's sort of second in charge. He was pictured on a rather luxurious Harley Davidson. In enjoying the freedom of the streets of Caracas, I think, or it's somewhere in Venezuela. And this guy loves caviar. This guy, or some of them do, allegedly.
careful, though.
They're in Cuba. It doesn't sound like they're having a terrible time. And, you know, the thing the FARC has in their favour is time.
Yeah.
They've spent 50 years in the mountains. They are at the negotiating table. They're getting lots of delicious free publicity, staying in some rather nice hotels, I'm led to believe. and the Santos government doesn't have that time because it faces re-election. Now, can you have the peace process going on while there's a presidential election campaign? No. I find it very difficult, frankly. So theoretically, it all needs to be wrapped up by November. Can't see that happening, to be quite honest. The FARC have got this negotiating position that they can just sort of relax. We can take our time with this because we have all the time in the world.
Well, they're in the driving seat. I mean, they're completely in the driving seat. They know it. They're not, again, like you're saying, they've got no rush. They've got nothing. And they know they can manipulate the following election. They know that 2014's presidential elections rest on them.
Yeah.
You know, whether Santos wants to run again or whether his chosen successor wishes to run, it's going to be the FARC that end up picking them. But you know, by whatever happens, a referendum, what have you. So I think, you know, both sides of the table need to be strong. Otherwise, lopsided table, no negotiation ever takes place. But we have to take, you know, there's so much navel-gazing here, saying, oh, the Colombian conflict is so complex, it's so this, that. Stop that. There are more complex civil conflicts out there. Just look at the Philippines. I mean, if you want complexity, that's the one to look at.
Or South Africa. We're not talking about race here. This is not to do with race. This is economics, distribution of land. You know, it theoretically shouldn't be that difficult to sort out.
Yeah, it's not religion. It's not race. It's land and the same people sharing land.
And money, of course.
Of course. But it's the economics behind it. And yet, you know, it's confounding at times where we sit here and we hope. But I feel in the Colombian, let's say, the psyche, there's a cynicism towards these talks. Mm. I don't know. But there is, Richard. We're going to have to bring this to an end. This has been a really fascinating episode of Colombia Calling. I hope that we've revealed a little bit about the political situation in Colombia at the times. And Kevin, thank you for your time.
Pleasure, thank you. On the political side, it's very complicated. There's a hell of a lot of issues. And as we're coming up to the election, it's a difficult moment in Colombian politics and a very interesting one. I'm certainly fascinated by it. I hope you all have been too.
Check out Kevin's website. It's Colombia, Colombia-politics.com. I'm Richard McCall, your host, and this is Colombia Calling. Thank you for listening.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.